in Shmuel, still in Perek Yud Zayin, chapter 17. An optimist or pessimist, depending on how you look at it, might say that we have chance of finishing the chapter today. I think it's more likely it will continue into next week. But we'll see, because today we have the big topic, which is, why doesn't Shaul know who David is? And if he does know who David is, why is it that he asks who he is? So that's the big topic we have to get to. There are a couple of things we have to get through first. Before we do that, I just wanted to thank the following people whose donations from our Day of Giving back in July are associated with this shiur. So Marlene Haidt, Ishai Hirschberg, and our very own Ruth and John Gross. So thank you very much. We are in the aftermath section. Goliath is now knocked down, and David, if you take a look at Pasuk Nun Bet, sentence 52, David has knocked off his head. Right, that was in sentence 51. And then Pasuk Nun Bet, sentence 52, the Plishtim have fled, and we're told, Ve'akumu anshei Yisrael v'Yehuda v'yariu. The men of Yisrael and Yehuda, I'll come back to that phrase in a moment, stood up and trumpeted. They made a lot of noise. Vayirdefu es haplishtim, and they chase after the plishtim ad bawacha gai v'ad sharei Ekron, all the way back to the strongholds of the Philistines, of the plishtim, the gates of the city of Ekron, one of their key cities. Vayiplu chalalei plishtim baderech sha'arayim v'ad gaz v'ad Ekron, and the plishtim are falling, and I think falling doesn't necessarily mean falling, but it means getting knocked down, the falling in battle. All the way back to Gat, all the way back to Ekron. So we noted last time that the fact that they're fleeing sounds like we're not sticking to the agreement, that they're going to become the slaves if Goliath, in fact, loses. And we gave different explanations. Either Abarbanel said that was never a serious offer in the first place. This isn't a duel. Malbim says it was offered by Goliath, but David never accepted it. Or Rav Bazak said, yeah, it was supposed to be the deal, but the Plishtim were not ready to live up to their agreement. So they tried to get away in the hope that presumably they'd be able to fight again. Next chapter. This business of Yehuda and Yisrael is interesting. Does this ring a bell from anything we've seen already in Sefer Shmuel? Does this ring a bell? Kind of hoping it does, but it's a long time ago. More than a year ago. Chapter 15, sentence 4, please. Okay, you gotta roll back a bit. They are preparing for war against Amalek. Vayishama Shaul Esa'am. Shaul rallied the nation. Vayifkidem Batilaim. And he counted them with sheep. We had that whole discussion about what counting them with sheep means. Not going back to that right now. But he counts them, and he ends up with Masayim Elef Ragli, 200,000 men on foot, Vaseres Alafim es Ish Yehuda, and 10,000 from Yehuda. So Shaul is counting separately Yehuda and the nation. That's interesting. And that's not the first time. Go back even further in Sefer Shmuel to chapter 11, sentence 10. This is after Shaul has been anointed, some of the people aren't accepting him. Nahash, king of Ammon, launches his assault on the people of Yabesh Gilad. Well, not his assault, it's his threat against the people of Yabesh Gilad. And they turn to Shaul for support, and Shaul rallies the people in support. And look what it says there, back in chapter 11, and I wrote in my notes sentence 10, but I don't mean sentence 10, clearly. What I mean is... Yeah, there it is, sentence 8. I don't know why I wrote 10. Vayifkedem bebazek. He counted the people either in a place called Bazek or with shards of pottery. We read that Gemara talking about the issue of counting individuals. That's not our focus right now. Our focus is the actual count. So, Vayu b'nei Yisrael shlosh meos elef. There are 300,000 of b'nei Yisrael. V'ish Yehuda shloshim alef. And Yehuda, 30,000. So once again, Why is it that we are breaking out Yisrael and Yehuda perpetually in these military settings? What's that about? So I'll tell you what we said when we saw this a while back. We quoted Abarbanel. You remember the discussion we had back in chapter 9 when Shaul is selected, and we had the question regarding the selection of Shaul in terms of you're choosing someone from Binyamin to be king. Isn't Yehuda supposed to be the king? Doesn't Yaakov say, Lo yasur shevet mi Yehuda? The scepter shall never leave the tribe of Judah. So Abarbanel's answer way back when was that what Yaakov was saying was not that Yehuda will necessarily host the king. The king isn't necessarily from that tribe. However, what he's saying is that they will always have the first position. Their tribe will always stand out as being leaders overall. It's the lead tribe, not necessarily the king. So, working with that idea, you could suggest that that's what we're seeing in all of these military settings. They are set up as the leaders. So when we count the nation, we say there are 300,000 of everybody, 30,000 from Yehuda, and so on in the Amalek story as well, 200,000 from them, and X number from 10,000 from Yehuda. And here too, going back to our chapter and the pursuit of the defeated Plishtim, maybe that's what's going on. Vayakumu anshei Yisrael v'Yehuda. Yisrael and Yehuda got up and pursued Yehuda as the leader. The problem, of course, with that is then you should mention Yehuda first. I'm not sure why you mentioned Yehuda second, unless the answer is you mentioned Yehuda second because they're fewer than everybody else. Right? Think of Lulav and Esrog. When we pick up a Lulav and Esrog, which hand holds the Lulav? The right hand holds the Lulav, correct. But if you think about it, which one is considered to be the greatest of the four species, if you can say that? Sorry? People are muted. What? The Esrog, right. The Esrog is considered the greatest of the species. So why is it that we pick up the Lulav in the right? We usually put the greater in the right. The answer being, because there are three species with the Lulav. The Lulav has the Hadassim and the Aravos attached to it. So we go based on numbers. So maybe that's why we mentioned Yisrael first before Yehuda. Either way, it's an interesting thing to take note of, and it's going to come back later in this book because, of course, the Yehuda is going to have a very significant separate identity. It's not going to be along with Yisrael, but we'll talk about that eventually. Okay, so the people are pursuing the Plishtim. Vayashuvu b'nei Yisrael midlok achrei Plishtim vayashosu es machaneihem. In sentence 53, I should say, excuse me. They come back from pursuing the Plishtim, and what a great turn of phrase that is, or a great word, delok acharei Plishtim. They, right, ladlik is to light on fire. They had lit, I think that's the phrase in English, right? Lit out after the Plishtim is a phrase for that kind of pursuit. They had lit out.
Well, don't they have a shirashirim?
That's with a gimel.
Yes.
That's a gimel. That's Dalet Lamed Gimel. Yeah, but it's, and maybe that's where this comes from, meaning Gimel and Kuf? It's possible. Possible. A Yemenite would be horrified because they pronounce Gimel as a J. I'm just looking at the, Professor Kiel in the Dot Mikra to see if he offers anything, but he just says, Delikahi Redifa Bechema. It is pursuing like with rage, with fire, so to speak, and he gives you the quote, of course, from Bereshit Lamed Aleph. It's Bereshit Lamed Aleph Lamed Vav. When Lavan pursues Yaakov, right? It was last week's parsha. Lavan pursues Yaakov, so there the pasuk says, just opening it up, Mapishi machatati, Yaakov says to him, what have I done wrong? Ki dalakta acharai. You lit out after me. So, yes, that's the term, but it's a great word, isn't it? So,
it's also, in English, the word hot pursuit.
Hot pursuits. Very good.
Perfect.
Very good. So the Jews are done with this hot pursuit, and now they come back, and Vayashosu es machanehem, they loot the Plishti camp. Vayikach David es rosh ha-plishti vayivi'ehu Yerushalayim. David took the head of the Philistine and brought it to Jerusalem, v'eskelav sam be'ahalo, and he put his stuff, not the stuff that held the food that he brought out. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the weapons and the armor and all that from Goliath. He put that in his tent. That's a really interesting thing. What bothers you about that sentence? Sentence 54. What should bother you about that sentence? Right, so Leona asks, why are you bringing this to Yerushalayim? What is Yerushalayim at this point?
Yeah, nothing. He's the one who made it the capital afterwards. What's Yerushalayim?
Right, why are you bringing it to Yerushalayim? It's, we do have some confusion about who lives in Yerushalayim. Because on the one hand, we have a passage in Shoftim which tells us that Yehuda conquered it. On the other hand, we know David is going to have to take it from the Yebusi. So there's some discussion. There's a city in Yerushalayim. There's a fortress in Yerushalayim. And that's something that we'll come back to. But that's one question, is why did you bring it to Yerushalayim? What else?
It's something you would think he would have brought to the king, to Shaul, maybe.
No, the head he just drops in Yerushalayim somewhere. What in the world are you doing, David? What is David doing, and when is David doing it, is really the way I would sum this up. Because as Claudette points out, there has to be some reporting back to the king here, and I'm not seeing it at this stage. Yes, and that's part of the question, is where does this story fit in the timeline? When exactly did this happen? And by the way, we have another problem. Where is David's tent?
That's a good question.
He doesn't have a tent at the battlefield, right? He's there by accident, right?
Maybe on the pasture where he grazes his sheep.
So in other words, he brought it back home.
Yeah.
Could be. It's possible. I don't know. Linda, what were you going to say?
That was in Beit Lechem.
That's in Beit Lechem, correct. So he's got some stuff in Yerushalayim, some stuff in Beit Lechem. And by the way, where is the sword? You tell me, where is the sword of Goliath?
Did he take it?
No.
It's part of the
no. Ruth, you were going to say? Ruth, unmuted.
No, no.
Oh, no, not you, Ruth. The other Ruth. Sorry, we got two Ruths. No, not there. Sorry, Ruth Mamart? In the Mishkan, good. It is in the Mishkan. In chapter 21, David is going to get it from the Mishkan in Nov. So,
Mishkan?
Yeah, the Mishkan is in Nov right now. Nov Irak Kohanim. That's where David is going to be when he runs away from Shaul, and then Shaul wipes out the city. So, now I'm completely lost in terms of where this sword ended up in Nov, because it doesn't say anything about Nov here. Sorry? Is Nov Yerushalayim? We're going to come up with a very interesting idea along those lines, although it's a very strange one. So, wait and see. Let's finish off the chapter first, because we have more to confuse us. Actually, you know what? No. Let me pause there in the psukim. We'll do one confusion at a time. I think that's probably good policy. Okay. So first of all, Abarbanel notes something that I think is easy to miss. And it's the contrast in sentence 53 and sentence 54. Right? In sentence 53, what does the nation do? They plunder the camp, which makes sense. The Jews didn't have a lot of weapons. The Plishtim did to take their stuff. Nonetheless, it's described as this raiding of the Plishti area, whereas David, what is David doing?
He did not go, it says.
He doesn't go to the camp to raid their stuff. Instead, he does what he does with Goliath's head and armor and weapons. Take a look at Abarbanel in source number 1, who explains what David was doing. V'igid ha-katuf. The text informs us. She-David lo halach l'shlol shalal. David did not go to take spoils. V'lavoz baz ki yeser ha'am. And to take spoils like the rest of the nation. Aval hayash lalo rosh Goliath ha-plishti. His spoils were the head of Goliath the Philistine, V.S. Kelav, and his equipment, his Kelim, Asher Lakach, which David took, V.A.V.O.S.A.M. Lifnei Shaul, and he brought them before Shaul. So that's something we haven't seen yet. We'll have to figure out where that fits. And then, Umisham Holicho et Harosh Bechol Arei Yisrael. And then, from there, he took the head around the cities of Israel, Levaser hanashim vehataf, to tell the women and children, ad shehevi'uhu Yerushalayim, until he brought it to Yerushalayim. In other words, what David is doing is Kiddush Hashem. He's carrying around the head of Goliath around the cities. I see you, Jeanette. Hang on 1 second. Or maybe a little more than a second. But we're gonna have to figure out when did he go to Shaul, like Abarbanel says that he's bringing it to Shaul. So that's something I want to come back to. But what does this remind you of? This tour that David does with the head.
When Shaul did it with after Amalek.
Bingo. Remember we talked about how Shaul is in all these different places. He's up in the Carmel and he goes this place and that place. And we, Chevron, and we said, what in the world is he doing? And our answer was that he is parading Agag around the country in order to make a statement. He happens to be incorrect. That wasn't what he was supposed to do. But David is doing this here. He has no command not to. With the head of Agag, with the head of Goliath. I wrote Og down in my notes. That's pretty funny. They, got your giants mixed up. But the idea is that this is a declaration to the nation, to those who were not present. That's why it says Hanashim Be'atav, the women and the children, they were not there as soldiers. So he wants to let them know what has happened. Jeanette, you wanted to say?
Well, I was just I'm just wondering where Abarbanel gets this, and I'm wondering if maybe he interprets hello, not as his own Ohel, but Shaul's Ohel.
Right, so we're gonna get to where this comes from. We're not there yet, but we will. The truth is, like, that's a reason to sort of read the rest of the psukim, because it fits with the rest of it. Maybe jump ahead for a second in the chapter, because otherwise it really won't make any sense. Jump to sentence 57, please. So we're gonna read it in a vacuum. Sentence 57. Uchashuv David me'akotzes haplishti. When David came back from striking the Philistine, vayikacho so Avner vayivyehu lifnei Shaul barosh haplishti biyado. So Avner brings him to Shaul, and he's got the head of the Philistine. So that's where this plays out. Okay. So Abarbanel says everybody else is reading the stuff. And David is taking a tour of the country with the head. At some point, he's also in front of Shaul, as you see there in sentence 57. But we still don't really understand what's this business with Yerushalayim, and where is he putting the stuff. So the taking of the head is very clear. It's with the goal of letting everybody know what has happened. And not only Abarbanel says it's to take a tour, Radak says it, Ralbag says it. This is what David is doing. Okay, that's good. But why did you bring it to Yerushalayim? What's that about? So, two or three different ideas. Just making a note for myself for later. Okay. So the simple answer is, yeah, Ricky. Right, so we're going to come back to the question of what of the tent part. I want to deal first with the head in Yerushalayim, and then come back to that, and we'll see if Ohalo could be Shaul's tent. It's hard, because Shaul hasn't been mentioned in the Pasuk. You'd have pronoun without any antecedent.
The chronology is a little bit off, I think.
No, but it's just, it doesn't work, meaning you never referenced him. to say it's his tent, meaning Shaul's, is hard to say. But we'll get back to that. The simple explanation for why he brings the head to Jerusalem is it just worked out that way. And commentators do this in two different ways. One is Radak. Take a look at source number two. Radak says, "V'achar kach heviyehu biyado ba'arei Yisrael." David then took the head and carried it around the cities of Israel. Levaser hanashim vehataf vaosam shaloyu b'melchama, to inform the women, the children, and whoever didn't go to the battle. Ad sheheviyuhu ad sheviyahu ad Yerushalayim, until he brought it to Jerusalem. Until he was able to bring it to Jerusalem. So Radak, as far as he's concerned, just says Jerusalem was just the last stop on the tour. Why? Well, any city could have been. It happens to be Jerusalem was. Linda.
Maybe it's like foreshadowing. Mm-hmm. Because Jerusalem was supposed to become such an important city for him.
Right.
That it's not just an accident.
Right.
That he landed in Jerusalem.
Could be. I certainly have no reason to disagree with that. Etty?
Also, the valley where they were fighting, the closest city to it is Jerusalem. They have gone to this town.
Is that true? I don't know. You'd have to know more about the ancient map to really be able to say that. I'm not so sure. The Malbim says something along the lines of where Etty was going with this, but he goes a little bit of a different route. He points you to what we read in sentence 57. And you know what? Go read sentence 58 also, because you really need that in order to understand Malbim. After he's brought to Shaul, Vayomere loves Shaul, ben miata hanar. Shaul says to him, who are you, kid? Vayomer David, ben avdecha Yishai, beit halachmi. And he says, I am the son of Yishai, beit halachmi of Bethlehem. And then, you have to actually keep on reading, vayike chaloso ledaber el Shaul. He finishes speaking to Shaul. Yonasan loves David, which we're going to have to come back to, obviously. And then in sentence two, Shaul takes David to become part of his household. So that becomes really important. Now read Malbim. Malbim says, Tchila haviyolif ne Shaul. First he brought the head to Shaul, right? Like we saw in sentence 57. And then he went with Shaul around the cities of Israel. Actually, it could be with the head, or it could be with Shaul. That's not so clear. But it says in Pasuk Vav, I think it means with him, meaning with Shaul, not with the head. But he has the head. And then it says, "Umisham chazar im Shaul ad Givat Shaul iro." And then he went to Givat Shaul, which is Shaul's place. We know that already from chapter 15. Ve'havi'oli Rushalayim shayas samuch l'sham. And then he brought it to Jerusalem, which is right nearby, like Ethi was suggesting. It's near the battle, so he's saying it's near where he ended up with Shaul. And then he addresses the problem of who is living in Rushalayim at this point, and he says, granted that Yevus, this Jebusite, Canaanite tribe, is currently living in Jerusalem, I've already explained, Yevus was in a fortress, and the city itself was in the hands of Israel. And that's something we have to talk about. He's referring you to his comments in Shoftim, but that's something we have to talk about more. Bottom line is that you have one approach that says the head goes to Jerusalem because it worked out that way. Whether it was a stop along the tour of the country, or really at the end of the tour of the country, or Malbim, that it was right near Shaul's place. We know that he goes on a tour with Shaul and ends up in Givat Shaul. So then he brought it to Jerusalem after that. According to either of these approaches, the only reason the text mentions that it went to Yerushalayim is indeed foreshadowing. Because this city is going to matter in the future. You don't mention random places unless those places are actually going to be significant at some point. So that's all one set of approaches. Then you get these two other interesting ideas. One idea is interesting and I can't agree with it just because I don't understand it. And the other idea is also really interesting and I really don't understand it. So nonetheless, I bring you both. Take a look, please, at Radak quoting his father in source number 4. And this goes back to something somebody actually suggested here. I don't know if they had already seen this. Radak quotes his father, Radoni Avizal Kasav, my father said, Ki nov ir ha-Kohanim kina Yerushalayim. Nov, the city of the Kohanim, also known as Jerusalem. Because we know that the Philistine sword was there, Kamoshim Ufurash, as is explicit in chapter 21. So we're going to see it there. So that means that maybe Jerusalem, Nov was also called in this text Jerusalem. Not necessarily meaning that people randomly called it that back in the day, but the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, the Great Assembly, when they canonized this text, call Nov Jerusalem. Abarbanel looks at that and says, really? You know, he's like, well, I guess if you have a tradition like that, fine. But otherwise, you know, not so much. Which is a phrase that actually Radak uses sometimes. I wonder if Abarbanel is using that tongue-in-cheek. But in any case, that's one approach I don't understand. The other approach is Rav Bazak. And he offers you the following intriguing possibility in source number 5. And I'm going to read just my English translation because it's a longer quote. It appears that this verse does not describe a present circumstance. It's not what's happening right now, but something that happened much later when David had already selected Jerusalem as his capital city and perhaps even as the site of the sanctuary, because we know that David indeed wants to build it and he picks the place and he even donates materials. From this perspective, bringing the head of Goliath to Jerusalem is obvious, for it was traditional, as we've noted in the past, to bring the booty of a victory to the sanctuary to express recognition that the victory came from God. Right? That's something everybody did. The Philistines did it when they got the Aron. Nebuchadnezzar later on would do it with the spoils from the Beit HaMikdash, from the temple. Everybody did that. So he's bringing it to the sanctuary in Jerusalem. And he says, the second part actually is not relevant yet, but I'll mention it. He says, at first, in truth, the sword was brought to the Mishkan of God in Nov as part of the custom of demonstrating the association of the victory with God. Eventually, David received the sword from Achimelech, from the Kohen in Nov when he fled there, and from that's in chapter 21. And from then on, it accompanied him in his battles until in the end he could place it in his tent in Jerusalem. That's the idea. What's the weakness in Rav Bazak's approach? What's the problem here? Yeah, Claudette.
One, David was young. David had no clue that this place is going to become important to him at that point in this story, right? In my view. And,
Well, Rav Bazak will answer that by saying that this is describing what's happening later. David isn't bringing it to Jerusalem now. Right now, he's just holding on to it.
But I don't see that because the story doesn't come.
Right, the text doesn't really indicate passage of time here. That's true. Sandy, you were going to say?
They have no refrigeration.
Yeah. What in the world are you doing with Goliath's head? How long are you holding on to this? We know. You have a period of time between now and when Shaul dies, and there's debate as to how long that is. You then have 7 more years in which David is reigning from Hebron. There's even a period after Shaul's death, Ishbosheth, whatever, but David has 7 years in Hebron before he goes to Jerusalem. What did he do with the head the whole time? I mean, you had mummification, right? There was such a thing. I mean, we have a mitzvah of burial also, by the way. That's got to figure in somehow. What are you doing with this skull? Yes, Sandy.
And also, if they would have mummified it, it could have been like a
God or something for somebody to look up to, like that you're preserving it, like they do, for example, the handle that puts, forgive me, I can't remember, in Christendom.
Right.
Of a saint. So
right, it becomes a relic.
Exactly why it would never happen, right?
Yeah, I don't know. This idea, like many of Rav Bazak's ideas, it's really interesting, but I have a very hard time with it. The idea that, yeah, that's what we're describing here. I mean, the point that Claudette pointed out, that the text doesn't indicate passage of time, I can work with that idea, because we've had other explanations also that suggested it was after Shaul, and we do that sometimes. I can deal with that, but you're carrying around a guy's head. I mean, what is that? Leona, you're muted. You're still muted, Leona. There you go.
I'm on my iPad because it didn't work on the other computer. I spent 10 minutes frustrated.
Sorry.
To get my daughter-in-law to rescue me. Anyway, to me, that's an irrelevant question, because what did he do with the head anyway? In other words, you're concerned that how did it linger for 7 years without, well, probably would turn shriveled and maybe just get a skeleton at one point of a head, just the skeleton of the head. But, I mean, what was he going to do with it anyway? I mean,
well, that's part of my problem.
What his intention is with this head?
Well, if I take the view
right.
that he brings it to Jerusalem as part of demonstrating, all the credit goes to God, right? In the same way that in the Mishkan, when the Jews were in the wilderness, they put a jug of the man in the Mishkan. They had various items that ended up there as tributes showing, look, this comes from God. So, all right, fine, you put the skull there. But he's sitting there with it for 7 years before he gets it to Jerusalem? I don't know. I have a hard time with that idea. But in general, what it's for is to tell everybody, look, the Plishti warrior is dead and God did it. That's really what this is fundamentally about. Okay, the rest of the kalim, the rest of the vessels. So I don't want to spend a ton of time on this. So I gave you a table instead after source number 5, just to show you the different approaches to what happens with the ohel, meaning the text said that he brought the kalim, the implements of Goliath to the Ohel. So what Ohel is it going to? And then how does the sword end up in Nov? So just going line by line in there, Radak says that he brought the Kalim home, right? He brought the vessels back to his Ohel, which means back home in Beit Lechem, and the sword goes to Nov. But why? Because it's there in chapter 21. So obviously that means the sword didn't go home with him. That's the easiest read. Abarbanel said he brought the Kalim to Ohalo, not his tent, but God's tent, which is the Mishkan that's in Nov. And therefore the sword is also in Nov. Okay. Ohalo is a hard read that way, but not unthinkable. Malbim says that's not what happened. He brought everything like it says in the text. La'ahalo. He brought everything to his tent. And eventually, he moves the sword to Nov to commemorate the miracle by putting it at the site of the Mishkan. So everything goes home, and then he brings stuff to the Mishkan later on, and our text didn't bother to say so. And then Rav Bazak, we already read in source number 5, which is, he brings them first to Nov, and then to his home later on, and that's the, except for the sword, which, I'm sorry, including the sword, because this is after he's retrieved it from Nov. Yes, Leona.
I know this probably sounds sacrilegious, but could the order be all mixed up in this section?
What do you mean?
What do I mean? I mean, if you take 54, right?
Yeah.
And you take 55, could, while B'nai Israel, I'm not even sure where the fighting is, but I'm assuming it's immediately after he kills Goliath.
That's what it said. Yeah, the text said they turn and run and the Jews run after them.
Yeah, okay, so we know that takes place then. Then I would go to 55, where Bichor
I mean, it's a creative possibility. We do have a principle of in mukdam u'me'uchar that things can be out of order, and that can apply in Tanakh as well. As a matter of fact, not this week, but next week, we're going to see a fascinating suggestion of out-of-order areas. I don't think you're forced to say that, but it's an interesting possibility. Janine?
When it says that that could sometimes mean past perfect, and that's how to put it. Because it doesn't say vayasem, but some. And I think we've run into this before. I think I read someplace when it says some, that means that something that happened before whatever it is.
Right. It can be. Oh. It can be.
So he had put it into his tent, wherever that is.
Right. No, you could do that. I'm not sure how much it helps, but you could do it. I mean, it will help the view that says that Yerushalayim is later.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So this brings us to the problem of Shaul not knowing David. And that's where we have to go next. So we've got 20 minutes to deal with this now, and then the rest of it we're going to deal with, God willing, next week. And then what I'll probably do after that is do a summary of chapter 17, because this is already week 11, I think, on it. And we've seen an awful lot, which is good. But we need to review it. So there will be a final next week on chapter 17. That got people's attention. Also, just I'll mention now, some of you already know this because you've been in other classes of mine this week. If I could ask for as many people as possible to stay for a moment at 2:30, I need your help with something. So for those who are able to do it, that would be great. Okay, those who already know what I'm talking about know what I'm talking about. Everybody else, don't worry, it's painless, I think. So here's the deal. Pasuk Nun Hey, sentence 55. V'chira'os Shaul es David yotzei likras ha'plishti. When Shaul sees David going out to greet the Philistine, meaning before they actually fight, before he kills him. Amar el Avner saratzava. Shaul turns to his general Avner, and he says, Ben mi zehanar Avner? Whose son is this youth, Avner? Vayomer Avner, cheinaf shecha hamelech im yadati. And Avner says, by your life, O king, I have no idea. I don't know. Vayomer hamelech. And the king says, sha'alata ben mi zeha elem, ha'alem. He says, do me a favor, go find out who this youth is. And then, as we've read, when David comes back from striking the Plishti, Avner brings him to Shaul. V'rosh ha-Plishti biyado. By the way, he's got the head. V'yomer elav Shaul ben mi'ata ha-na'ar. And Shaul says, who's your father? V'yomer David ben avdecha Yishai beis halachmi. And David says, your servant Yishai of Beit Lechem. Oh boy. We got problems. Eti, go ahead. You're muted, yeah.
Two things. One, if David was already playing for Shaul before, then he should know.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you really just send him into battle against Goliath without even knowing who he was? How desperate are you? It's just like, by the way, who is that cannon fodder we just sent out to battle? What is this? Sandy.
And on top of it, he'd offered him his protective mail as well. So that's, you don't just send that to anybody just.
Yes, he offered him his armor too. This is true. Claudette.
I think this is a case where Shaul is, the want of a better word, pretending that he doesn't know him because he don't think he wants to give the honor to David for winning this battle. And I think Abner is also pretending to go with the king's idea. You know?
But I don't understand. He says this before David wins. He says this when David is on his way out.
Saul could send him out to battle, but then in the following chapter you will see that Saul
really didn't want to give his daughter to David, you know.
Right.
And so he could be pretending that, you know, he was saying, oh, I don't know this guy. Why did he go up there, you know?
Like disowning him.
Yeah.
And, it's an interesting idea.
Because like, he's the king.
Did you send him? It's an interesting idea. Yeah, Sandy.
I think sort of expanding on that to me, if he did know David, Saul knew him before, he thought he's just a helpless, harmless little musician. And that was sort of his relationship, perhaps. So now he saw him come back and said, okay, and that's why he gave him his armor. So when he now slew Goliath, which was unexpected for anyone to do, that's why Abner sort of said, wow, I don't know who he is. This wasn't a plant. We didn't know all along that he was this powerful warrior to come and supplant you. Because I think Shaul is saying, hold on, who is this guy? Like, I thought he was this person, but who is he really?
So, I don't know. It's an interesting idea. The only problem is, go back to chapter 16, sentence 18, please, when they pitch David to Shaul as a musician in the first place. Right? Echad ha-ne'arim, we took that in the Medrash to be Doeg. Right? Somebody says to Shaul, Hine ra'isi ben li'yishai beit halachmi. There's a son of Yishai, by the way, you don't know who his father is. Just go back to chapter 16, because you found out back then. There's a son of Yishai of Beit Lechem, Yodea Nagain, he knows how to play music, V'kibor Chayil, he's a warrior, he's a mighty man, V'ish Milchama, and he's a warrior. I mean, come on. You know exactly who this guy is. Janine?
Couple of things. First of all, did we discuss at the beginning of this parak that we don't know how much time lapsed between the music playing and this battle, so
yes.
It could have been years later.
True, but we didn't know that David ever stopped playing music for him. Consider that in this chapter, right? In chapter 17, we said, where was the pasuk? When we were explaining why David wasn't at the battlefield and didn't know what was going on, it was chapter 17, sentence, where was it?
In the 20s.
It was earlier. Sentence 15. V'David holech vashav me'al Shaul. David was coming and going from Shaul to herd his father's sheep. So that I think that's shot.
Yeah, also, I mean, Shaul could have been a little, I don't know, adult, but then what's his name, didn't know who he was either.
So. Right. So you could suggest, hang on, I see everybody's hands. You could suggest that Shaul is just confused because he's dealing with a lot, not to mention he's a king, but he's also dealing with this ruach ra'ah. Maybe he really doesn't remember him. But then you have to ask, so what happened to Avner? Avner ought to know who this guy is. I see so many hands, and I understand why. I just want to, I want to make sure we get to the questions we need to get to and at least get started on the answer, because I got six answers to give you. Leona.
I just basically have, I'm noticing that when he's brought to Shaul on the battlefront before Shaul arms him, Shaul never asks him then who he is.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
So something is very strange here. In other words, is this a kind of a rhetorical question on Shaul's part? Who the heck is this guy really? Who is he really? He's not this little shepherd boy who played for me. Who is he really?
Mm-hmm. So that's close to something that we're going to see.
He doesn't say, who is this? He says, the son of who is this?
Good. One of the big points here is, he doesn't ask, who is this kid? He asks, who is his father? Now, on the other end, he doesn't mention the name David, who is the father of this youth. So you really could read it either way. The other piece of this that no one's really asked is, he says to Avner, go find out. Avner doesn't go find out. Avner says, I guess I'll bring him to you. What happened? So this is such a colossal mess. We have six different approaches, all of which are valuable, and all of which have reason to support them. What I want to do is first do the three most literal answers, and do the three that are more creative. I tabled them for you on the sheet. If anyone wants to cheat and just read the table, you could, but I think that takes away some of the fun. It does, because like you already know where we're going. That's not the same. But I think it's worth knowing that answer number 5, or 5A really, is the Gemara's answer. The Gemara gives me a read of it, and yet all the commentators, other than Rashi, see fit to offer other approaches. In other words, as you can see, just going down the table, Radak quotes his father, the Malbim, Ralbag, Abarbanel, are all giving you other ideas besides the Gemara. They're very comfortable doing that, and that speaks to the relationship between Drash and Parshanut. Drash will give you answers that fit with the anomalies of the text, but don't necessarily satisfy the storyline overall. And that opens the possibility for the Parshan, the commentator, to say, I think I want to offer you something that fits the storyline, even if it doesn't go with the nuances of the text quite as well. So we'll see that here. So the first approach is he knows who David is. He even knows that David is the son of Yishai. But he wants to know, can this guy really represent us against Goliath? This kid, this musician perhaps. If you take a look at source number 6, that's Radak's father's approach. He says, Peresh Adoni Avi, my father, my master, who already told us that Nov was called Yerushalayim there, you may recall. So he explained, Ki kasher ra'a Shaul es David yotze likras ha-plishti belo pachad. Shaul saw David going out to the Philistine fearlessly. Sha'al la'avner, he says to Avner, ben mi zehanar, whose kid is this? Klomar, teida im Yishai aviv haya gibor chayel. Do you know if his father was a mighty person? Shenivtach agvuras haben, such that we can trust that his kid will actually be mighty. Ki imhu gibor ben gibor, if he is mighty and he's son of somebody who's mighty, Yosef Ometz, that will show increased strength. Ve'avner lo yada, but Avner didn't know. Ki Yishai hayaza kein bayamim ahem. Because Yishai was already older, we've already seen that. Yishai is older at this point, David is taking care of his sheep. And so Avner is not aware. That doesn't explain why Avner did not ask someone. It just explains why Avner did not know. The only problem, not the only problem, one of the problems with this answer is seen in the text itself when David gives his response to him. Right? When he asks David, who is your father? What's David's answer? Yeah. Did that answer his question? If his question was really, is your father a mighty warrior, why didn't David answer that? So, according to this, that was his question, though. So Radak says, I'll help you out. He said he is from Beit Lechem. He's Beit HaLachmi. What does the name Beit Lechem mean to you?
Lechem, a warrior. Lechem, fighting.
Right. Lechem can be bread or food. Beit Lechem, the place where you get the food. But it could also be the place of war. It's a play on words. It's a pun, effectively, says Radak. He is Ish Milchama. He is a man of war. So that's answer number 1. Shaul knew who he was, but wanted to know, as he watches him go out to battle, is he from warrior stock, this kid? And the question persists, even after he beats Goliath, and therefore is put to David directly, and he says, yeah, my father's a warrior. If you have any questions, I can show you the head. That's the first approach. Clear? I know that there are elements that it clearly satisfies in this story. It explains why he asked who's his father instead of asking who he is. It explains why he asks before David actually kills Goliath. I'm not so clear on why he's still asking after David kills Goliath. I'm not sure that the question really is significant anymore. Maybe Avner is just, thinking the question still matters. I don't know. But that's a first approach. Then I pick up on something that Sandy noted, which is, this guy's going to have to marry his daughter. So Malbim says, Shaul starts to think, I wonder if I made myself a Yiftach deal here. Remember we talked about him offering his daughter and how that can backfire on you? So take a look at source number 7 at Malbim. Take F be his
nut.
Sorry?
Do we have that Shaul said he could marry the daughter, or just the words that David said he could marry?
We have the whole nation saying this has been promised as a reward.
But Shaul didn't say it.
No, we don't have Shaul's words in saying it to the nation. We don't have Shaul addressing the nation at all. But we have the nation quoting him, and I have seen no reason to doubt it, given that Shaul afterwards feels like he's supposed to follow through. So I think that this was his thing. We in general, this goes back to a point we've made before, we in general have seen Shaul as very inactive in this story, and we've said it reflects a great fear that he feels, and that's driving a lot of what's going on here. So take if bis nadev david el chom ito Allah ali boki behechvech itzterech l'shalem nidro v'lasveis lewez bito. When David volunteers to go fight Goliath, it dawns on Shaul, I may have a problem. I'm going to have to actually make good on this vow. V'lachein darash tekef al kavod beis aviv. And therefore he asks, whose son is this guy? Who am I mechatanim going to be? That's his question. Lo ladat shemo, not about knowing his name, ki adash, hashem aviv Yishai. He knew. This guy's father's name is Yishai. We know because we read it in chapter 16. Rak ladas yichuso uma'alaso. He wanted to know his lineage. Va'omro ben mizeh hanar avner. And when he says, whose son is he, Avner? Who? Im aviv miyuchas nichbad unesu panim. If his father has proper lineage, he's an honored guy, this is a guy who should marry into the king's family. Parenthetically, I'm giving a shiur Sunday morning for Midrashet Yom Rishon. If I remember, I'll send out the flyer to you. But we have a Midrashet Yom Rishon on Sunday morning. My topic is going to be Hanukkah's war on the aristocracy. Very much about this issue of lineage. He's got to have good lineage in order to be able to marry in. So we'll talk about this in that shiur. Bli Nether, I'll send you the flyer so you can see the information, but it's on Zoom, of course, from 10 to 11:20. Dr. Ahuva Bergman is giving the first shiur, and I'm giving the second shiur. So, but going back to this, there's only one big problem with what Shaul is asking Avner, which is, we said that Yishai was Baba Anashim. Everybody knew Yishai. He had a big entourage, the Gemara says. How does he not know? So Malbim, we already saw this once before, does not go with that idea. Malbim read Baba Anashim as Zakein, that he's elderly. Baba Anashim meant he was older already, like Baba Yamim is also used that way. So Malbim finishes in source number 7 saying, "Va'avner lo yadam ma'ane alze." Avner didn't have an answer for this. To who is his father? What's his lineage? Ki kavod Yishai lo noda'az. Because Yishai's honor was not known at that point. He's just an older man. That's all. This also doesn't answer the question of why Avner doesn't make the inquiry he's supposed to make. Hang on one second, Ruth. We have at least 3 Ruths on this, but all of them, hold on a second. The question that we asked before, that David didn't answer him about his lineage, applies here as well. So Malbim explains, I didn't bring it on the sheet, but Malbim explains, David isn't looking for reward. Remember, we already said that earlier. David doesn't care about the reward. He says, this guy blasphemed against the armies of God. That's good enough reason to chop his head off. I don't need an incentive. So when Shaul says to him, you're eligible to marry my daughter. What family are you from? I'm from Yishai, Beit Lechem. He's like, he's not selling himself. That's the way that Malbim reads this story. The big problem with this answer is that he asks this question before David actually does anything to Goliath. You know, he must be really impressed, thinking that David is actually going to do this. I don't know. Okay. Yes, Ruth. Ruth C.
Is it possible that he's not achieved this feat, which nobody else could do, and everybody else was afraid. How, you know, where did this come from, this ability to be so brave?
It's, so if the,
what have you done to deserve it, kind of thing?
Well, if this were only a question he asked after David won, then I could totally agree with you. You know, this is like the team won the championship and they went to the whatever, White House or whatever, whatever it is here. I don't even know the name. I'm sorry. They lived here for 12 years. What's the name of the place where the prime minister lives? What's the name of his office? Sorry? No one else knows. I'm okay. Ottawa. Thank you. I could have told you that. In any case, he shows up.
No, Marino Hall is the governor general. That's the
Okay, folks, this wasn't the point. The point is this. I'm going to mute everybody now. The point of this is that he shows up at the king's palace, and he just took down Goliath. I agree with Ruth. The question you're asking him is, who are you? How in the world did you do that? The problem, though, is he asked the question before he even did it. There, this question can't, that just doesn't fit. This is a hard answer to work with. You could say he was just really amazed. He thought, maybe. Maybe. I don't know. Okay. We're going to get to the other four answers next week, God willing, but I want to do something else very, very quickly.